నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 7 చాప్టర్ 6 చాప్టర్ ఎంటైటిల్డ్ ప్రహ్లాద్ ఇన్స్ట్రక్ట్స్ హిస్ డెమోనియాక్ స్కూల్ మేట్స్ టెక్స్ట్ నంబర్ 5. తతో తతో యతేత కుశలః క్షేమాయ భవమాశ్రితా శరీరం పౌరుషం యావన్ న విపద్యేత పుష్కలం. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్: దేర్ఫోర్ వైల్ ఇన్ మటీరియల్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్ భవం ఆశ్రితః, ఎ పర్సన్ ఫుల్లీ కాంపిటెంట్ టు డిస్టింగ్విష్ రాంగ్ ఫ్రమ్ రైట్ must endeavor to achieve the highest goal of life as long as the body is stout and strong and is not embarrassed by dwindling. Purport by His Divine Grace Abhay Charanarvind Bhakti Vedant Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj at the beginning of this chapter, Kaumara Acharit Pragya. The word Pragya refers to one who is experienced and who can distinguish right from wrong. Such a person should not waste his energy and valuable human lifetime simply working like a cat or dog to develop his economic condition. For one word in this verse, there are two readings, bhavam ashritaha and bhayam ashritaha. But accepting the meaning of either of them will bring one to the same conclusion. Bhayam ashritaha indicates that the materialistic way of life is always fearful because at every step there is danger. Materialistic life is full of anxieties and fear, bhayam. Similarly, accepting the reading bhavam ashritaha, the word bhavam refers to unnecessary trouble and problems. For want of Krishna consciousness, one is put into bhavam, being perpetually embarrassed by birth, death, old age and disease. Thus, one is surely full of anxieties. Human society should be divided into a social system of brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas and shudras. But everyone can engage in devotional service. If one wants to live without devotional service, his status as a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya or shudra certainly has no meaning. It is said, sthanat bhrashtah patante adhaha. Whether one is in a higher or lower division, one certainly falls down for want of Krishna consciousness. A sane man, therefore, is always fearful of falling from his position. This is a regulative principle. One should not fall from his exalted position. The highest goal of life can be achieved as long as one's body is stout and strong. We should therefore live in such a way that we keep ourselves always healthy and strong in mind and intelligence so that we can distinguish the goal of life from a life full of problems. A thoughtful man must act in this way, learning to distinguish right from wrong and thus attain the goal of life. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Gaurudev Pushpavanto Chitro Shandauta Monodav Ugro Hare Krishna. Tato Yate Takushalaha Chemaya Bhavamashrita Shariram Paurusham Yavan Na Vipaddeta Pushkalam. So today we are reading from this chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam 7th canto, wherein Prahlad Maharaj has got an opportunity to speak freely. This is the almost the first time in his life where he's got an audience which is innocent. Just prior to this, he had got a brief chance to speak about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness to his father. And in a nutshell, he spoke this philosophy to his father in such a way his father was totally bewildered. Hiranyakashipu had spent almost 10,000 years of his life or more in trying to achieve the perfection in material life. In fact, we can go on record by saying that no one ever has been able to achieve the same results as Hiranyakashipu. He was perfect in the sense of achieving the ambition of a materialistic way of life. Actually, he was practically unchallenged. He could enjoy whenever, wherever, however he wanted to. Practically, Hiranyakashipu had the best ATM card. Wherever he wanted, he could withdraw his savings. He did not need to go to an ATM machine. So, very powerful personality. And such a powerful personality does not reach his status, his position, without being convinced about it. You don't find, just like once on the streets in front of our temple here, there was a person who appeared to be like a beggar. And he was trying to trade off or let me say it this way. Maybe it had happened that some devotees, he had approached them on the street and they had offered him some money. So he was trying to trade off $1 bill for some paise. He actually had a $1 bill. He had $1 in his hands. And you are asking someone on the street, can you give me some 1 rupee or 2 rupees for this? 5 rupees will also do. So practically he had no idea. He had a $1 bill, but he had no idea. He had no knowledge, no conviction as to what was the buying power of $1 bill. In India, it has some buying power still. Right? So Hiranyakashipu was not someone who had been offered a $1 bill and did not know what to do with it. He had systematically studied all the scriptures in the world, all the textbooks of knowledge. He had planned out his line of action. And with great determination, he had achieved his goal. And just in one verse, Prahlad had totally bewildered him. And the next time he meets Prahlad Maharaj, in two verses, he completely destroys his Hiranyakashipu's conviction is totally torn to shreds. What should I do with Prahlad? He's like an enemy in my house. So much for materialistic achievements in this world and the conviction that one has for it. Hiranyakashipu had spent hundreds of years to achieve that, and Prahlad Maharaj, a 5-year-old boy, destroyed it within moments. Completely destroyed his conviction. So, we see now when Prahlad gets this opportunity to speak, and his audience is receptive, and he has time at his hands. Not much, but he does have. So he expands on the philosophy that he was trying to explain to his father. Prahlad Maharaj had seen his father very closely. And the one thing that he had learned from his father is, take life as it comes and enjoy it thoroughly through your senses. In fact, Hiranyakashipu had tried to prolong that enjoyment in the temporary body that he possessed. Prahlad Maharaj had very minutely observed his father. And he saw his father had received heavenly pleasures. He had got the kingdom of heaven. He had the opulence of Indra and all the demigods. The great rishis and munis would be offering him respects. The Gandharvas, the Siddhas and Charanas would be singing songs and waking him up. The Apsaras would perform for his pleasure. The demigods would come and offer him the best of gifts. It was like Hiranyakashipu was the mafia king of the universe. Whenever he had a party, all these big people would have their cars parked outside. The demigods, the rishis, the apsaras. It was noted. Such big people could only visit him. And that too from a distance. And Prahlad Maharaj, when he approaches Narasingadev later on, he says, the power that my father possessed was so great that if somehow involuntarily his eyebrows just moved in front of the demigods, you know, Hiranyakashipu just felt an involuntary twitch and his eyebrows just moved up and down. The demigods became so frightened, they would shake standing in front of him. He said, this was the prowess of my father. In one verse, Prahlad says, actually, he does not analyze it like that, but just for the sake of some innocent fun. Prahlad Maharaj says, my father was the control of the whole universe, but he was so intoxicated with pride and ambition that his eyes was constantly rolled like a drunkard. So in one of his states, maybe the eyebrows just moved in involuntarily. And the demigods became frightened. And Prahlad says, I have seen it. But within a moment, he was destroyed by you. Was Kal personified for him? And therefore, my dear Lord, kindly give me your shelter, kindly give me your blessings. Because these are the real blessings. This is the real shelter. So here, Prahlad Maharaj is trying to explain to his friends the nature of material existence. In the previous verse, Prahlad Maharaj has given a brief synopsis of what is material existence. He says material existence is full of endeavors. If someone thinks that I will live my material life without making any endeavors, then that is foolishness. It is full of endeavors. There is always prayas going on, some activity going on. Generally, the force of material nature will make these activities directed towards achieving goals for sense gratification. It is natural. A young child will always be dependent on its mother for food. But very rarely, maybe one in a million lifetime will be a child who will say, I want only Krishna Prasad. Yes? Like there was Narottam Das Thakur. When he was born, he would not accept any food. So everyone, only the first son, the first child after so many years, born to his father, King Krishnanand Dutt. So he was very anxious. He tried all remedies. He called so many people, tried so many ways to make him eat. Finally, one saint advised him, please offer him some Vishnu Prasad. And as soon as he was offered Vishnu Prasad, immediately he accepted it. This young child, this baby, he accepted Vishnu Prasad. And his father passed a decree that from today onwards, my son should only get Prasad that has been offered, an offering that has been given to Lord Vishnu. Nothing else than that. So that will be just one child. Generally, the force of material nature is such, Sarvair Prakriti Jair Gunaha, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Everything happens by the force of material nature. One will go after food. And the three necessities, food, shelter, clothing. This take up so much of our energy. How does it take it up? There is so much in this material world. All the resources of this material world are somehow or the other trying to maintain these three aspects of material existence. Food, shelter, clothing. Or in the according to Srimad Bhagavatam, it is Ahar Nidra Bhaya Maithun. The entire resources of material nature is being used for that. The facilities offered to the human form of life is simply being used for that. And did we have a choice in this matter? No. This is the nature of this, the three modes of material nature. The three modes are very, very powerful. The mode of ignorance. The person is not even aware of the sad situation that one is in. The person may be drunk, lying in the street, in the sewer, in the gutter, with the water in the sewer running all over him. And you offer him help and he says, no, I'm tasting pure Ganges water. This is a mode of ignorance. Not even aware of the sad situation, the difficult situation one is in. Why? Because of one's intoxicated state. Maybe we'll laugh at it. Maybe we think that this is not very much applicable to us. I mean, obviously, we can distinguish between sewer water and Ganges water, isn't it? Especially if in Kali Yuga, if we visit these holy places now, we can see there's not much difference. So many sewages are running into these rivers. You really need strong conviction to take 3 drops of water. Right? Even a learned person becomes bewildered. Recently, one person had gone to Badrinath. Very educated, a PhD in chemistry. Maybe 50 years of age. Working in a very high position in the government. Very qualified. Good family. Nice children, nicely educated. The whole family has lot of facilities for material enjoyment. They decided to go to Badrinath. And for those of us who visited Badrinath, the Ganges is there. Alaknanda comes down. And right besides that are some hot water pools, sulfur ponds. So he went there along with few other family friends. And they saw everyone taking bath in these pools. And now since people have the facility of soap and everything, so they were applying soap and, you know, taking bath in the pools. So he convinced the others not to take bath because soap water, it's so dirty. You know, people are washing off all their dirt in that pond. Now, a person who is PhD in chemistry should know that sulfur never gets impure. Whatever it may be, the sulfur in that water, sulfur is actually poisonous in one sense. It kills everything. It destroys everything. Now, even from the viewpoint of chemistry, from the material background, it is very easy to be convinced that these sulfur ponds, if one takes bath, nothing will happen. You won't get any skin problems. In fact, all the skin problems will go away. So what to speak of having a spiritual conviction? Even materially, material nature is such that even though one has good knowledge, the force of material nature convinces us otherwise. Definitely it convinces us otherwise. The intelligence is saying, this is good, take bath, no problem. I mean, where else will you get sulfur water? It is supposed to cure all your skin problems, kills all the germs. There's so much sulfur there. And plus, the pool is always being, refurbished, you know. The water just passes off and fresh water comes in from underground. But still, just the sight of people taking bath, somehow or the other, convinces this scientifically minded person that this is not a good place to take bath. That is material nature. What to speak of no spiritual conviction? When a few devotees were going to Kedarnath, which is a 14-kilometer trek and little steep. There was this nice lady, slightly well-built. She hardly could go half a kilometer. She was riding on this palki. But the endeavor of doing that was so much for her. She said, I'm going back. I don't want to go ahead. Made all provisions to come to this holy place. But the material modes force her in such a way that she has to go back. So whether one has material conviction or one has some spiritual understanding, the modes of material nature, one should never consider them lightly. This material world is a place which is very, very dangerous. And therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam describes it. It is a place where at every step there is danger. And sometimes, very occasionally, material nature presents such incidences that makes you really laugh at the futility of trying to conquer her. Recently someone was mentioning to me about the Titanic. Few people survived. Now, for those of you who know, the Titanic was a big ship which even God could not sink. That is what they thought. God never sank it. An iceberg did. Krishna had many other activities to perform. So a simple iceberg, which in God's creation is so infinitesimal, Krishna, no one even notices it. Although we may feel the iceberg is very big, in Krishna's creation it is so infinitesimal, so small. And it sank a ship which people believed that even God could not sink. But a few people did survive. And one of them went on to live for up to 80 years of age. So he survived the Atlantic. Somehow the other did not drown. The Atlantic is very cold. Somehow survived that. One day, as you're sitting at his breakfast table with soup in a small plate, a soup bowl, there was soup and he was trying to drink soup. Suddenly, he felt some pain and he could not control himself, could not control his body activities. He fell face forward into the soup and drowned in the plate of soup. Now, this is how material nature, sometimes we get a glimpse of how very playfully she takes away everything so, which we feel we have saved for ourselves. This man considered himself so very lucky. I survived the Atlantic. So many people drowned. Thousands, millions. I was the lucky one. God chose me. Or something like that. But ultimately he drowned. Not in the Atlantic. Not in an ocean. And supposing he had survived his drowning. He had drowned and come back. How would he have told his tale? Now, I survived drowning in the Atlantic, but I drowned in a soup bowl. It's so embarrassing. That is what material nature is. It embarrasses us time and again. However, the slight glimmer of happiness that she offers us on the horizon of the enjoyment of life, just a glimmer of that, and it's there on the horizon, it's like a mirage in the desert, makes one go on endeavoring throughout life, one day I will be successful, one day I will be happy. And the major portion of our life simply goes in lamentation for what we have not achieved. Human love form of life, if it can be put in a nutshell, it is simply shok, moha and bhay. There is lamentation, shoka, there is illusion, and always one is fearful. In the 9th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastime of Lord Ram is explained. Very few chapters, because Valmiki Muni has described it in great detail, so therefore Shukdev Maharaj does not explain it in detail. That is etiquette. Sorry. In one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada explains something very interesting in connection to Lord Ram. And taking cue from him, I would like to narrate another incident from his, another pastime from Lord Ramchandra's activities on this earth. Lord Ram, when he was in the forest, Mother Sita was stolen from him. And he became very unhappy. And he was searching throughout the forest for his wife Sita. Prabhupada writes, Lord Ramchandra is setting an example for all of us. He writes something like this in his purport. He says, in the human form of life, if one is too attached, if a man is too attached to his wife, or vice versa, then this is what one gets. Lamentation. Even Lord Ram had to go through lamentation. He was crying tears. Where is my wife? Where is my wife? Where is my wife? So this attachment leads to lamentation. Very interesting point. And we have the example set by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So perfect example. So Lord Ram is searching and then he sees, he's acting as if he's so bewildered, he does not know which direction to go. He runs in one particular direction, wondering, oh Lakshman, is Sita here? Then he asks the trees, do you know where there is Sita? He asks the animals, please, Sita would treat you so very nicely. You must know where Sita is. Please tell me. Now just in retrospect, in the Ramayana, never previously does Valmiki Muni describe any conversation between Lord Ram and the trees, Lord Ram and the deers and the animals. It is not that, I'm not saying that it did not take place. What I'm saying is, just in retrospect, just to analyze, to understand the situation in which he is, how much the Lord is performing the activity of being bewildered and how much he's lamenting. That he's going and asking the trees, did you see Sita? He's asking the animals, you must have seen Sita. And then, Sri Lakshman, he points out to him, just look at the deer. They're pointing out towards the south. Maybe they are indicating something. Maybe we should go in the direction of the south, in the southern direction. So they go in the southern direction. After some time, they find that the trees are broken, there are leaves fallen down, there are marks of skirmishes, of some battle taking place. And then in a distance, they find some form, some body lying with blood all over the place. A huge body. A huge form. And Lord Ram turns to Lakshman and says, Lakshman, I think that is some asura. Maybe here we can see from all these signs, there have been two people who have been fighting. So one of them stole Sita, then he met the other person in the forest, then they have fight over Sita, and one of them there is lying in a pool of blood. Or maybe this is the one Rakshasa who is now taking rest after eating Sita, and this blood is from Sita's body. Thinking thus, Lord Ram takes his powerful, undefeatable bow in his hand. He holds it with his left hand, strings it, takes out an arrow with his right, puts it on the bow and says, right now I will dispatch this particular fiend, this demon, to the netherworlds. And somehow, within all this, faintly audible sound of Ram, Ram comes to his ears. Lakshman also hears. And then he says, oh, somebody is taking my name. Who is this? And then close inspection, Lord Ram sees that this is Jatayu. And then he starts telling Lakshman, just see my situation. I lost my kingdom, had to live in the forest. My father died in my absence. I could not even perform Shraddha. My wife has been stolen from me. And now my great friend, my father's friend, my well-wisher here is dying. Can anybody else's situation be more deplorable than mine? And then he consoles Jatayudev. However, what I would like to ask all of you devotees is, consider this point. Taking up from what Srila Prabhupada said, that Lord Ram, in the purport, he says, because the Lord is showing through his example that there is this attachment, therefore he becomes bewildered. He's crying, he's lamenting. This lamentation, such a feeling of being completely unable to do anything because Sita is gone, that attachment, even prevents Lord Ram from actually recognizing his devotee, which is not very possible. There is Jatayu. Lord Ram definitely knows this is my pure devotee. There's no question about that. But the lesson that we can draw from this incident is, the forces of material nature which cause lamentation and hankering in this world are so powerful that even a very intelligent person gets easily bewildered by the situation and can commit an activity which later on one will regret for one's entire life. And that is what Prabhupada, in the last line, he's saying, in this purport, this point is very, very relevant. This is a regulative principle. One should not fall down from his exalted position. Somehow or the other, one has got an exalted position. According to Prahlad Maharaj, the human form of life is an exalted position. One can make more advancement therein, but definitely getting a human form of life is an exalted position. One should not fall down from this. One should not take part in activities which will degrade one's consciousness and take one back into the animal species of life. Very, very dangerous position. Somehow or the other, one has got this human form of life meant for self-preservation. The real self is the soul, part and parcel of Krishna. One should try to preserve that consciousness. Other species of life do not afford the opportunity for self-preservation. There's no question of, you know, maybe there is a choice. There is absolutely no choice in the other species of life. If somehow or the other, any living entity in any other species of life shows some aspects of devotional service, it is purely kripa. It is purely ahetuki kripa. Unadulterated mercy. Because the other forms of life do not afford the opportunity. Only the human form of life affords the opportunity. And therefore, na pateta. One should not fall down in the human form of life. One should somehow or the other preserve what one has got and try to expand it. As devotees, this is very important. This is the greatest wealth that we have, the wealth of Krishna consciousness. The challenge is the 10,000 hooded form of material nature, which in different ways will try to conquer us. Time and again it has embarrassed us, time and again. Every time we are inattentive, every time we are not very alert, material nature immediately. Prabhupada says, he quotes his Bengali verse, that as soon as one misses Krishna, jhapatiya dhari. Maya jhapatiya dhari. You know, jhapatiya means pounces. If someone has ever experienced someone pouncing on him, you can feel that. Just try to feel that emotion. You have been pounced upon by someone. There is fear, totally bewilderment. You lose all your intelligence. What do you do? Who are you? Where are you? Nothing. Nothing comes to you. Because you've been pounced upon. So that is the avaranatmika shakti of material nature. Just pounces and steals away our good intelligence. Immediately. Jhapatiya dhari. Like that. Now somehow or the other, in the human form of life, we've got this opportunity for Krishna consciousness. We should jhapatiya dhari. We should pounce upon it. Not let material nature anymore pounce upon us. Be alert. I like to quote this verse from the Upanishad. Uttishtata jagrata. Awaken. Be alert. Now, therefore, in this human form of life, inquire about Krishna consciousness. The Vedanta Sutra states, first verse, that is the hetu of the entire sutra, the first verse. Now, therefore, inquire about the human form of life. So, Krishna consciousness, the practice of Krishna consciousness is all about a simple fact. The opportunity offered in the human form of life should not be wasted anymore. The maximum benefit should be gotten from it. So, the simple reason, death can come at any time. We don't have time, we cannot postpone things for the morrow. We cannot say, tomorrow I will do it. We are not sure about death. And even if we are sure about it, we cannot be like Parikshit Maharaj. Now I am sure about my death. Doctor said, 7 days after that I am going to die. Where will so many sages come for us? You see, those sages played a very important role in Parikshit Maharaj's maintaining his consciousness. Thousands of sages all over the world, they received via their sage network the information that Parikshit Maharaj is now needing help. That Parikshit, who has such qualifications, immediately they all came. If somehow or the other we are lucky to have maintained good devotee relationship, I'm not saying the best of relationships, somehow or the other if we have been lucky enough within our lifetime, within our devotee lifetime, to maintain good enough devotee relationship, then devotees out of their kindness may come. But we are not sure when death is going to arrive at a doorstep. So padam padam yat vipadam. This is the vipad. Every danger in our life simply is giving us a glimpse of our death. Anytime on the street we miss banging another car misses us. What are we afraid of? Dying, right? That is a glimpse of our death there. Every time we get choked up on a glass of water, just imagine how we be choked. A glimpse of our death. This is the vipad. The only vipad in this world is death. The loss of the human form of life. Comes in various forms. You lose money. It's a great vipad. It's a great calamity. Why? Because it signifies death. Poverty, hunger causes death. Students lose out upon the opportunity to get good grades. Good career gone. Good career gone. Money gone. Money gone. Poverty. Poverty, hunger. Hunger means death. So this is the challenge and the greatest danger wherein we do not consider this challenge seriously is when in the form of devotion, when in the human form of life, we get the opportunity to perform devotional service, and we, the verse from the Purana states, Arche Vishnu Shila Dhihi. You consider the deity form to be simply a stone to be decorated nicely. If not, you consider the devotees to be ordinary personalities. You consider the Charanamrit of the Lord to be just ordinary water, ingredients, and so on and so forth. Take the association of devotees very, very cheaply. The scriptures narrate so many pastimes where someone who has considered any of these aspects, even to a slight extent in a cheap way, has not given it its proper significance. Immediately, one loses one's exalted position at that moment or within a few years. In the Gaudiya Vaishnava lineage, we have the example of Rup Kaviraj. Such a devotee, staying at Radhakund, knew the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya by heart, could narrate them in such a sweet way that far and wide people would come and hear from him. Every day he would give morning and evening class, and thousands of devotees would attend his class, including one of the daughters of Srinivas Acharya. If I'm right, Krishna Priya Thakurani. Now, somehow or the other, she had a unique quality. Her unique quality was she could not stop her tongue from wagging. It would always move. Now, what is so unique about it? Everyone's tongue moves. We always wag our tongue, as we say. The uniqueness about her was her tongue would always move chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. And this would go on uncontrollably. She had no control over it. Involuntarily. It was just going on. Her tongue would just go on chanting. Now for many of us, this would be a very nice pastime. This would be a very nice activity to imitate. The easiest, in fact. There's a danger. Sometimes when we are attracted to great personalities, the attraction is towards imitating their activities. Very easily. The force of material nature wants us to do that. We want to imitate them. What we do not realize is the purity that is behind such an involuntary act. That we do not possess. Therefore, we have to fake it. Since we are already performing an imitation, then we have to fake, build up on the lie, and there's this whole superficial thing going on. Anyways, Rupa Kaviraj was actually a very, very, very good devotee, advanced. In fact, the pastime states that he was in the stage of bhava, experiencing the sun rays of love of Godhead, the early morning sun rays. And everyone just loved him. So he was giving class, and Krishna Priya Thakurani was sitting there amongst the audience. And somehow or the other, he noticed her. And he noticed her tongue moving. Now, this is one of the principles in devotional service. Devotional service is not just an activity. Devotional service is direct contact with Krishna. When we do service, it means there has to be a person who receives our service. There has to be the recipient of our service. That is Krishna. Devotional service can be performed in innumerable ways. Definitely. Krishna is unlimited, without doubt. His capacity of receiving, accepting service is unlimited. This we understand. However, what we have to understand is our capacity of rendering multifarious activities at the same time is limited. We generally have the capacity of concentrating only on one activity. We can never do two activities at the same time. Very difficult to concentrate on both of them. And therefore, one of the principles in devotional services, try to render only one activity at a time. hearing class, please don't chant your rounds also at the same time. I like to give this joke. A devotee was once chanting his rounds and watching TV. So he was asked, one should not watch TV. No, spiritual activity, even that will become spiritual. Krishna is all powerful. Holy name is all powerful. TV is insignificant. Like someone who is smoking cigarette who says always, I can give it up anytime, no problem. The same attitude. TV is insignificant. Krishna is all powerful. Anytime I can switch it off, no problem. Right? So two activities. Either watch TV and you'll realize how much we have wasted our time. Or try to chant your rounds and make good use of our time. Right? But doing both makes us feel that we are safe. This is perfection. I'm watching TV, chanting my rounds, and I'm not affected. My consciousness is not affected. So anyways, if one is reading Srimad Bhagavatam, then one should read Srimad Bhagavatam. Not try to do some other activity along with it. One cannot concentrate. Especially in terms of this ninefold process of devotional service. When one should try to concentrate on one of those activities without trying to, you know, somehow the other, or mind being distracted by another limb. So this is a good principle to accept. So here, Rupa Kaviraj noticed that she was listening to the class, at the same time her tongue was moving. So after the class, he approached her very humbly and said, you are the daughter of Srinivas Acharya. I am so fortunate to have your presence in my katha, in my class. However, dear mother, please consider this. While reading, while hearing class, one should not do some other activity like chanting. So please, it's disturbing. The next day she was giving class, he noticed the same thing as he was giving class. After 2 or 3 days, he got so disturbed that in public, he started deriding her. Not directly, but in an indirect way. Devotees should be very careful. They may be in a very exalted position. Whoever they may be. But they should not do such and such activity. And soon enough, he was criticizing her. And soon enough, he was not staying at Radhakund. And soon enough, he was not practicing devotional service. And soon enough, he fell into the company of people who are practicing black art and magic. And soon enough, he died and became a ghost. Fell down from his exalted position. Why? Because of slight bit of inattentiveness. Inattentiveness in his stage was considering a devotee's activity to be ordinary. From our stage, what we can see devotees as, our realization, maybe not so high, but we have some realization because of a practice of Krishna consciousness. Through that realization, when we observe the activities of devotees, material nature will force us to see the black aspect, the dark aspect. One should be careful not to fall down from an exalted position. Our exalted position is somehow by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, our eyes of knowledge have been opened. It was in Timir, it was in Andhakar, it was in ignorance, in darkness. The eyes are now opened. We have knowledge. And what is knowledge all about? This knowledge helps us to see the brighter aspect of devotees. Material nature, material knowledge is all about seeing the darker aspect of anyone. Trying to better oneself than others, putting another person down. But by the mercy of Guru, we get the eyes to see the good qualities in others. Material nature will force us to see the negative aspects. Who are we going to listen to? Whose shelter are we going to take? We are tatastha. Therefore, as devotees, we have to be constantly on the forefront of this battle with Maya. There's never a chance that we can relax and say, the war is done, the battle is over. We constantly have to endeavor again and again and again. only for one reason, so that we do not fall down from our exalted position. As Srila Prabhupada says, this is a regulative principle. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Any comments? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Itai Gaura Premanande.